This is VOA News. I'm Tommy McNeil. While trade negotiations with China continue, President Trump has decided to extend the March 1st deadline to impose a 15% increase on $200 billion in Chinese goods. There's no deal yet, but Mr. Trump said he would postpone those tariffs if a deal were close. Senior U.S. and Chinese officials have been holding a series of trade talks in Beijing and Washington since Mr. Trump and Mr. Xi declared a 90-day truce in their trade war in December so a deal can be worked out. President Trump is readying for his second summit with North Korean leader Kim Jong-un, which is scheduled for this Wednesday and Thursday. As he meets with Kim in Hanoi, the Vietnamese capital, there is little concrete evidence that progress has been made to set the specific terms of North Korea's promised denuclearization. Secretary of State Mike Pompeo told CNN on Sunday that there is no change in U.S. economic sanctions targeting North Korea until it agrees to full verifiable denuclearization. The Mueller investigation into whether the Trump campaign colluded with Russia in 2016 is wrapping up, and one key Democratic congressman is contemplating legal action if the administration withholds the findings. Intelligence Committee Chairman Adam Schiff told ABC's This Week Sunday that they would go to court if necessary. Mueller will hand over his report to the Justice Department, which, based on Mueller's recommendations, will decide if anyone should be charged with a crime. Voting continued in remote areas of Nigeria, but for the most part, it's just a waiting game for final results in their presidential elections. Nigeria's Independent National Electoral Commission said it would reschedule some elections, but it is expected to start announcing election results on Monday. This is VOA News. The United Nations says the armed conflict in Afghanistan last year killed more than 3,800 civilians, including 927 children. That is the highest number of civilian deaths recorded in the past 10 years. The intensified violence injured nearly 7,200 civilians, and the overall civilian casualties rose by 5% in 2018. That's according to a new report released Sunday by the UN Assistance Mission in Afghanistan. It blamed a spike in suicide attacks by Islamic State's local affiliate. Also, an increased harm to civilians from aerial, as well as search operations by pro-government forces for the significant rise in the civilian casualties. A showdown in Venezuela between protesters and troops became a deadly flashpoint on Saturday. Security forces loyal to Venezuela's President Nicolas Maduro unleashed tear gas and rubber bullets on protesters trying to break through a blockade of U.S. foreign aid. Some trucks carrying food and medicine for Venezuela were set on fire. Dozens of people were injured by rubber rounds fired by soldiers. Earlier in the day, interim President Juan Guaido had given a personal send-off to the aid caravan leaving the Colombian city of Cúcuta. Maduro continues blocking aid entering the country and denies that there is any crisis despite the shortages there. He closed down the border with Colombia and Brazil and sent troops to guard all crossings, angering residents there as well as sparking the clashes that ensued. In a sign of dissent on Saturday, some soldiers did refuse to follow Maduro's orders and they defected. While Pope Francis has condemned child sex abuse by priests and the cover-up that followed, critics say that they are not impressed. Some survivors said that Francis' speech was a stunning letdown after some were allowed to tell their stories of horror, abuse, and violence. Francis closed a Vatican conference on child sex abuse Sunday by comparing pedophilia to human sacrifice and calling guilty priests tools of Satan. And again, trade negotiations continuing with President Trump deciding to extend a March 1st deadline that would have imposed tariffs from 10% to 25% on $200 billion in Chinese goods. So far, there hasn't been a deal inked yet, but the president said that he would postpone those tariffs if a deal were close to being made. Find more at voanews.com. I'm Tommy McNeil, VOA News. We'll be right back.
Good morning, Africa. Welcome to Daybreak Africa from the Voice of America. I'm James Barty in Washington. Today is Monday, February 25th, and here are some of the stories we are covering. Nigerians await results from Saturday's violent presidential election.
The body language of the present form of leaders, particularly the security agencies, is not really encouraging. In most places where we have had cases of electoral violence, disruption of polls, snatching of ballot boxes, they have been done in the presence of policemen.
Olufemi Akindele Lawson is a program officer of a local election monitoring group. We'll also hear the voices of some Nigerian voters. Senegalese are also expecting results from Sunday's presidential election. Sawal Jafari in Dakar will tell us what happened. In Sudan's president swears in a new prime minister as protesters vow to defy a state of emergency with more protests.
I don't think the new prime minister can do anything. Actually, I think you will see a lot of Sudanese on the street, you know, demonstrating against the government.
Hussein Shungraya is a member of the opposition National Front for Change Party in Sudan. And Guinea-Bissau National Park authorities work to restrict rice farming in the Bihago Archipelago. Those stories plus Samson O'Malley's post and our listener of the day are coming up on Daybreak Africa. Vote counting is underway following Saturday's Nigerian presidential election, where incumbent President Muhammadu Buhari, 76, is seeking re-election. His main challenger is 72-year-old former vice president and businessman Atiku Abubakar. The election was marred by violence and problems with electronic voting machines. One account says seven people were killed in a shootout between security forces and gangs. VOA reporter Peter Clotte is in Lagos covering the election. He spoke with Olufemi Akindele Lawson, a senior program officer for Women Arise for Change, a local election monitoring group.
I will categorize it from the point of the performance of the electoral body. INEC performed creditably well in terms of logistics, in terms of deployment of its personnel and material. We were able to achieve at about 95% of the entire polling stations across the country, opening at the stipulated time of 8 a.m., unlike the past where polling does not open until about 12 noon, you know, some cases afternoon in some places. And INEC also ensured that in those few places where polling did not commence at 8, it added additional hours so as to capture every eligible voters at that level. But one thing that is disturbing so far since yesterday has been the conduct of the security agencies in this election.
Let me ask you about the conduct of security agencies. Some blame them for some of the violence, which is blamed for at least 16 deaths so far, with many injured. How do you react to that?
It's very unfortunate. We have begun to raise this alarm since Friday, when in Bayelsa State, our observers, from the point of distribution of electoral materials, our observers noticed that some politicians have hijacked some electoral materials. And between that Friday night and yesterday morning, in a particular place called Basambri in Bayelsa State, in a particular local government called Ekeremo in Bayelsa State, there were cases of assault on innocent citizens, on electoral officials and electoral materials by politicians who were aided by the security agents in uniform. We found a situation whereby even some security agents who were not on official assignment, many of whom were just security agents attached to monitor pipelines in the creeks of the Niger Delta, were hijacked by politicians and they were used against the people in Bayelsa State. Likewise, the situation in Lagos, in part of Ogun State, in Edo State, in Rivers, it was alarming. Our observers had to scamper for safety yesterday in Akukutoro local government, where soldiers came and were shooting sporadically into the air. The conduct of policemen across the country, policemen in particular, have not really been encouraging. They have aided politicians, especially politicians of the ruling party, to divert materials to enhance electoral violence.
Some people say the conduct of security agencies, the snatching of ballot boxes, the burning of ballot papers in some states, not across the country, but in some specific areas of the country, could possibly impact the credibility of the election. As a poll observer and your observers in the field, what are your thoughts?
The school of thought is very right. Because if you look at where we were between 2011 and 2015, we were making progress. And that is why in 2015 general election, despite having an incumbent who lost election and considered defeat, no case or cases of loss of life, even though there were skirmishes, there were a few instances of disruption of poll in very few polling stations. It was not as rampant as what we witnessed yesterday, because the government's body language then did not tolerate electoral violence. And the president then restated this often, that his ambition is not worth the life of any citizen. And I think that would have been the message that this present crop of leaders should have been preaching, because the body language of the present crop of leaders, particularly the security agencies, is not really encouraging. Their conduct have aided in most places where we have had cases of electoral violence, disruption of polls, snatching of ballot boxes. They have been done in the presence of policemen, and even in some cases with active connivance.
Olufemi Akindele Lawson is a senior program officer for Women Arise for Change, a local election monitoring group in Nigeria. He spoke with viewers Peter Clotte, who is covering the Nigeria election in Lagos. Some Nigerian voters also share their views about the conduct of Saturday's presidential poll.
It wasn't peaceful, obviously, and of course, INEC, they weren't prepared. I mean, lots of people complained that their card readers were not functioning and ballot papers were not available. We are just quite disappointed that some Nigerians can actually be myopic enough to give in to the will of any politician who cares little about that person.
Actions here was pretty smooth. From assessing my polling unit in the morning, there were a lot of security officials on the road, and you just needed to show your PVC to be given access. I was happy to find independent and international observers too on ground to observe the process. It was pretty peaceful here, so it means we are getting something better. I think with time, elections in Nigeria would actually become good.
The turnout was much. I think someone was saying that was the first time they had that kind of crowd there. So, but everything, I think they finished around 4, so around 4 or 5. There was no problem. Everyone voted and it went. And outside, apart from standing in the sun for hours, then that was just the only inconvenience. And that was all. Yes, it's my first time voting, so at least my mind is settled that I've done what I need to do. Let's see what happens next.
The gathering was impressive. Despite that, the officers arrived late with the materials, just about 9:45. The voting eventually commenced. It was peaceful, and the law enforcement agents carried out their duties as I expected, peacefully. There was no problem around my area.
The views of some Nigerian voters after Saturday's presidential election. Vote counting has begun in Senegal, where the country held a presidential election on Sunday. Incumbent President Macky Sall is seeking a second and final term. He is considered a likely favorite. This after two popular opposition leaders were barred from contesting. Reporter Salwa Jafari of VOA's French to Africa service is in Dakar covering the Senegalese election. She tells me, for the most part, voting went smoothly on Sunday.
Voting has ended at 6 p.m. local time Sunday, so Senegalese people had plenty of time to go vote. We've been to about 4 different polling stations throughout the day, and I can say that the vote has been very smooth. People were peacefully lining up to cast their ballots. The process takes about 5 minutes. They check your ID and whether or not you're on the electoral list. You take 5 of the cards, each corresponding to the 5 candidates, and you put your ballot in the box. And then that's it. And the lines were moving very simple, very efficient. Of course, there have been reports of minor dysfunctions. For example, people with the wrong date of birth, people who go to the wrong voting stations, but nothing major. And we've talked to one of the 1,000 observers who have been accredited to observe this election. And they confirmed what we noticed ourselves, which is everything's going fine and a few minor issues here and there, but nothing really important. And that was later confirmed by the president of the Electoral Commission in the afternoon, that everything went fine throughout the country. He talked about also high participation rate in some of the stations he visited.
Talking to the voters there, President Macky Sall, who is seeking re-election, what are the voters saying, or what did they have to say as they went to the polls on Sunday in terms of where they were leaning?
Well, we met a lot of voters. And, you know, some of them are supporting Macky Sall. They want to give him another chance, another 5 years to finish what he started. And some of them want complete change and they want to go with the youngest, for example, Ousmane Sonko. And some others want to vote Idriss Sasek, and some others want to vote for the Akpo too. But what I am noticing as a trend in what I've seen on TV, I've been watching TV for a couple of hours and I've seen the results of 10 different polling stations. There is a trend going on, which is Macky Sall got a lot of votes and Ousmane Sonko also got a lot of votes. The last two are Maddy Kenyang and Issa Sall. That's all I can say until all these numbers are confirmed, probably tomorrow or the day after tomorrow.
What is the process of announcing final results? When are the final results expected?
Well, we've talked to the president of the SENA, which is the Electoral Commission, and he told us the final result should be released maybe in the middle of the week, which is Thursday or Wednesday.
Salwa, thank you very much again. So nice to speak with you.
You're welcome.
House reporter Salwa Jafari of VOA's French 2 Africa service in Dakar, covering Senegal's election. Today's Monday, February 25th, and you're listening to Daybreak Africa on The Voice of America. I'm James Barton in Washington, and please send your comments and opinions to Daybreak Africa at voasnews.com. Let's send shout out to listeners of all our VOA affiliate stations around Africa. Daybreak Africa time, 16 and a half minutes past the hour. Protesters in Sudan say they will continue to defy President Omar al-Bashir's state of emergency declaration. The protesters, who began their demonstration over economic hardship, now say they want to see an end to President Bashir's 30-year-old rule. Over the weekend, the president dissolved his government and named a new prime minister who was sworn in on Sunday. Mr. Bashir invited the opposition to join him in a national reconciliation. Hussein Shangrai is a member of the opposition National Front for Change Party of Sudan. He says he does not think the new prime minister will make a difference because by declaring a state of emergency, President Bashir has put Sudan back under military rule.
Actually, after the speech of the president, people is expecting, you know, the speech comes different than what is comes out of it. And it's look like it's just putting more power and changing the civilian to a military government. And is as he declared the state of emergency. And now even the military is everywhere with their tanks and everything. And there is actually less freedom of speech and less even the activity for the other people. I don't think the new prime minister can do anything because he is not a military and he's just a regular person, could be a secretary for the president to do whatever they want to be done. Actually, what is happening in Sudan now, the more rage and people, they get more angry. And I think you will see a lot of Sudanese on the street starting from even yesterday for the, you know, demonstrating against the government. And now they are just looking for, you know, the president himself and his military government to step down. Even the parties that used to be supporting him, now they are turning against him because he changed everything to a military government.
But how can the people want to demonstrate when the president has declared a state of emergency?
It has happened before for even many countries. If you look at Hosni Mubarak, he did that before, and even the, you know, Muammar Gaddafi in Libya, he did that, and it's still they lost their power after, you know, because people, they don't concern, because even it's nothing will be changed a lot, because even before he didn't declare it, but it was like that, you know, people, they get killed on the street, shot by the military. And I don't think the military is going to follow him in this step to start killing people, because what we think is about the military will be more national than the security that he used to lean on them.
In dissolving the cabinet, the president said he would bring in more technocrats, and he appealed to you, the opposition, to join him in national reconciliation.
Yeah, but you can't declare the state of emergency and then ask for the parties to come and participate and will be a freedom. This is a contradiction. You can declare a state of emergency and then you said that will be a freedom for negotiation and dialogue. No way. That's two things just contradicting each other. And it's look like even now it's just he hiring all the leader of the different states, 18 states, all of them as military. And even he didn't negotiate with any other parties for just putting as announcing a prime minister. He just did that without even sit with other party to negotiate that.
The suggestion is that perhaps the state of emergency is intended to squash the protest.
Not even the protest. It's both the protest and even the party. He used to be part of it, the leader party before the governing party. Now is looking like it's going to turn against him because now he fired all their cabinets and then replaced them with the military people.
Hussein Sheikh Raya is a member of the opposition National Front for Change Party of Sudan. He was speaking with me from Toronto, Canada. Guinea-Bissau's National Park authorities are working towards changing regulations in the Bihagos archipelago that will restrict rice farming on some islands. This move comes as a way to protect forests and sea turtles in the islands. Rita Patricio is the author of a recent study on how climate change is affecting sea turtle populations in the Bihagos. She spoke to Ricky Stryak about how the government will use their study to change rules in the Bihagos.
This is ongoing now. There will be, in the next 2 years and a half, they will be updating the park regulations. One of the things that came out is the importance of the vegetated area for marine turtle nesting, which usually it's not that obvious because you think, you know, they nest at the beach. So the forest is not, you know, a big issue. And the local communities, they do use the forest to for rice plantations. So from time to time, they use this slash and burn technique. So they don't use it at Poilon because it's a very restrict area. It's sacred. But they do it at João Vieira Island and at Mayo Island. And these are islands within the marine protected area.
As of now, the forests aren't as protected on João Vieira and Mayo. So they're going to put in new regulations that will protect those forests?
Yes, so that's the plan. So the thing is, the marine turtles also nest in these islands. So not as strong as in Poilon, but still a lot of turtles. So we think, you know, it could be like more than 1,000 nests in a strong season. And they will basically... It's never like super direct orders because that's not how they work. So they always get together with the community, and along with the community, they decide more or less the regulation. So it's a very participatory process. So, but they'll use all these science as arguments with the community to explain why they shouldn't be doing this slash and burn agriculture and they should leave the native forest alone. So hopefully this will be in the next, in the updated regulation of the park. That's what we're hoping for.
Do you know when they're going to start these meetings with the community? Because I'm sure this will be a long process.
Long process, yes. Well, they've started in 2018. There was already one big one. This was in November. Yes. So they had a big meeting in November. And I don't know the next one, but they'll be having more meetings now. So they've started the process.
Your research showed that climate change is, in effect, making more sea turtles female because of the rising temperatures and the way that sea turtle eggs work. What kind of changes did you see on João Vieira and Mayo?
We had, for the first time this year, 2018, we had a team working in Mayo Island. So usually we have the teams working in Poilon every year, each year. And and then we did 2 years in the Cavalos Islands, and we could see there was a lot of nesting there, and it's also quite protected. This year, for the first time, there was a team in Mayo, and it's very urgent to act there because we could see results of poaching in Mayo. So that's what's more. So we could see that first there's the problem with the destruction of the native forest, and then there's evidence of poaching there.
That was Rita Patricio, a marine ecologist at the University of Exeter. She was speaking to Ricky Stryak from Lisbon, Spain. It's coming up at 25 minutes past the hour time now for Daybreak Africa Sports. Here is Samson O'Malley in Abuja, Nigeria. A very good Monday morning to you, Samson.
Good Monday morning to you, James. We begin the sports with the draws for the 2019 FIFA Under 20 World Cup. Senegal has been grouped with host Poland, who will face Colombia in the opening match on the 23rd of May, and have been drawn in the same group as Tahiti. Group D will have Qatar, Nigeria, Ukraine and USA. African champions Mali is in Group E alongside Panama, France and Saudi Arabia, while bronze medalist at the just concluded CAF AFCON Under 20 Championship, South Africa is in Group F alongside Portugal, Korea Republic and Argentina. Now to the CAF Champions League, where Ismaili of Egypt conceded a late own goal to be held 1-1 at home by CS Constantine of Algeria on Saturday, and have hopes of reaching the CAF Champions League quarterfinals virtually dashed. The ban on spectators was part of the punishment given to Ismaili after they were reinstated in the competition on appeal, having been kicked out over crowd trouble. In the CAF Confederations Cup, there was mild drama on Sunday evening at the Moi International Sports Center Kasarani, as Gor Mahia outclassed Algerian side Hussein Dey in a pulsating Group D match of the CAF Confederations Cup. Gor Mahia left it very late to pick all 3 points in a match they dominated from kickoff, with both goals coming in the last 8 minutes. And now to Uganda, where Uganda Under-17 national team has stepped up training in preparations for the Africa Under-17 Championships due in April in Tanzania this year. Coach Jackson Madera is upbeat about the team's chances and the attitude of the players in camp. Uganda are in Group A with host Tanzania, Nigeria and Angola. The Normalization Committee of the Ghana Football Association has denied media reports suggesting that it has presented a budget of $7.2 million to the government for the 2019 African Cup of Nations in Egypt. A statement signed by Dan Yeboah, spokesperson of the committee, said they wish to state unambiguously that the said publication are false. In women's football, African champions Nigeria Super Falcons will depart the country later today to take part in the annual Cyprus Women's Cup tournament, which begins on Wednesday, February 27th in Larnaca. Head coach Thomas Danaby has selected 24 players for the tournament, which will also welcome another of Africa 3's flag bearers at this year's FIFA Women's World Cup finals in France. These include South Africa, as well as Mexico, Italy, Finland, Belgium, Slovakia, Korea DPR, Czech Republic, Thailand, Hungary, and Australia. In basketball news, Cote d'Ivoire on Sunday night completed the five-team African lineup for the FIBA Basketball World Cup 2019 in China after beating Mali 69-49 in their largest city of Abidjan. And that's it for Daybreak Africa Sports. I am Samson Omale in Abuja, Nigeria. It's back to you, James, in Washington.
Thank you, Samson. Have a good day. Briefly, before we leave you, a summary of Africa news. Vote counting is underway following Saturday's Nigerian presidential election, where incumbent President Muhammadu Buhari, 76, is seeking re-election. His main challenger is 72-year-old former vice president and businessman Atiku Abubakar. Vote counting has begun in Senegal, where the country held presidential election on Sunday. Incumbent President Macky Sall is seeking a second and final term. He is considered the likely favorite. This after two popular opposition leaders were barred from contesting. And protesters in Sudan say they will continue to defy President Omar al-Bashir's state of emergency declaration. The protesters, who began their demonstration over economic hardship, now say they want to see an end to President Bashir's 30-year-old rule. That is it for this Monday, February 25th edition of Daybreak Africa. We thank you for starting your week with us. On behalf of the Daybreak Africa team, I'm James Botti in Washington, wishing all of you in Africa a very productive week.
Hello, this is Shaka Sali, host of Straight Talk Africa.
On the next Straight Talk Africa, we'll examine the elections in Nigeria and Senegal. Nigerians are electing a president and a national assembly, and voters in Senegal are deciding who is going to be their next president. An in-depth discussion on the Nigerian and Senegalese elections.
Tune in Wednesdays at 18:30 UTC right here on VOA Africa.
Hello, this is Peter Clote of VOA Africa. I am in Nigeria to cover the general election. Listen to my daily reports when you tune in to our news shows. Africa News Tonight, Daybreak Africa, Nightline Africa, and International Edition for the latest from Lagos.